Okay, so this week we are talking about Trap.
Yeah, which you wanted to talk about, and I am interested to hear what you were bothered by, because I kind of liked it, actually.
I loved the trailer of Trap.
It's not a good start, is it?
Well, it's actually, it makes me think immediately of, you remember Bruce Almighty?
Mm-hmm.
Where they had a killer trailer.
Oh, and it was just all the jokes.
Exactly. They spaffed all the jokes up the wall in the trailer. And you go and see the film and it's like, oh, I know all of the comedic beats already.
Mm.
Trap isn't exactly that bad, but Trap, it sets up the premise really solidly in the trailer. Well, shall I say the premise for the first half of the film?
Mm. Yeah, because from the trailer, I thought he had set the trap.
Oh.
But I guess I just misunderstood. Not at all the case.
The deep complexities of the filmmaking of M. Night Shyamalan. I really like the trailer, and I did like the premise of the first half. I like a lot of things about the first half of the film, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But there are... I'm not usually held up on logic when it comes to a film. I'm usually pretty forgiving with that, I think. As long as it's sort of internally consistent to the world that they've built.
Mm.
But there's a few key moments which are, yeah, definitely big spoilers for this film, which just really threw me out of it. Why couldn't he just leave?
That did bother me. I think because I knew how much you hated it, I went in with like really low expectations. And also I thought it was... because I thought it was horror, because the trailer felt much more horror, and because it's M. Night Shyamalan and all of that, I just assumed it would be. And then it wasn't that scary. I was kind of like, oh, this is fun. But every time he almost leaves and doesn't, I was like, he could have just left there.
Yeah. What was the barrier to him leaving? And even at the point where he's backstage with... She's called Miss Raven, the character, right?
Lady Raven.
Lady Raven. And he reveals to her that he's the killer with this.
Yeah. From that video point, feed. I was like, okay.
It's like, why are you doing this? You could just leave.
Yeah.
They've narrowed down the list of suspects in the arena to the thousands still.
Yeah.
There is a mention of that maybe the person has a tattoo, which he does have. But that being the only potentially identifying feature, what, they're going to arrest him on the basis of that?
For me, it was the opposite. There are so many opportunities to catch him.
There's so many opportunities to catch him, but in catching him, what are they catching? Like, how do they know it's him?
Mm.
Like, they know this guy is going to be at the concert.
Mm-hmm.
But what incriminating evidence does he have? Like, he has his phone, which has that video feed of the guy who's been kidnapped. What, he's going to unlock his phone and show it to them?
I mean, I guess they would take his phone... Can they do that?
Yeah, but again, why are they seizing this guy's phone?
Yeah.
Like, what do they have on him? He could have just spent a nice evening with his daughter and then gone home with the crowd.
Yeah.
This is what really annoyed me about, I mean, the first half of the film. The second half of the film is a whole other story. But the first half of the film, with them not leaving and him being so worried about leaving and worried about being caught, I don't understand what they're catching. Because yes, he's the killer. Yes, he's the butcher. But it's not like he's got blood all over his hands.
That would have been more interesting.
What if he's got something incriminating on him that would tie him to these murders beyond maybe this tattoo? I think they mentioned at one point, maybe he's black, maybe he's white. Is that right?
They just know that he's above average height. That's it.
Exactly.
Which they then make a point of making sure that he is shot in that way.
Yeah, that's true. He does look very tall. I mean, I know he's a tall guy, but he looks taller in this than anything I've seen him in before.
When there's the space to crawl down into the backstage bit and he's trying to get his daughter to go.
The most psychotic thing ever to say to his daughter. She's like, what are you talking about?
I was like, why are you not just, just go? She's old enough. It would be slightly traumatic for her, of course, if her dad just like didn't come back.
Yeah.
But he could text her and be like, hey, I got taken outside by the police. They won't let me back in. Meet me by the car.
One of my biggest frustrations with this film is that there's a good film in there. And that's what I'm saying about the trailer. That's what I'm saying about the first half of the film. There is a good film in here. I don't even mind Lady Raven as a pop star on the stage in the first half. There's probably a bit too much music. I don't mind it.
Yeah, it was fine.
It's not something that actively annoys me. She actively annoys me in the second half of the film, where she's playing detective. Wait, before I get onto that, I did love the daughter's reaction when he says something about going down into the...
And she's just like, you're being weird.
Yeah, she's like, yeah. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. No, that was good. She was great. Riley was really good. She was believable.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah,
it was a human reaction.
It was a human reaction, and it was a teenage reaction as well, which I thought from the beginning with the whole like crispy thing wasn't going to happen.
Mm.
I thought that it was going to go in this like, oh, it's an adult writing a teenager. But actually, I felt like she was written as a teenager.
No, I liked her. I liked the way she was written. I like the actress. As I say, I like Lady Raven in the first half as well.
Mm.
And before we move on from the first half as well, one of the most bizarre things about the first half was Kid Cudi's cameo.
Yeah, that was weird. I thought you were going to say, because my first note on this was, why is James telling Josh Hartnett everything that he needs to know? Jamie, the guy with the t-shirts. He's like,
yeah.
Okay, total stranger, let me fill you in on this like top secret thing. And it was all a bit Dexter, you know?
Wait, he's the guy who right at the end in the post credits is like, oh my God, I helped.
Wait, there's a post credits?
Yeah. There's a post credits where he's watching it on the news.
Oh my God.
It's so funny. It's very good.
No, you go.
I was just gonna say Kid Cudi as like a random Targaryen.
Targaryen. I was gonna say Lucius Malfoy.
Yes, yeah, it's giving that too. He just comes in, gives Josh Hartnett fuck me eyes, mm-hmm. and then dips out. I guess again he was there to, he did a duet with Lady Raven, right?
Yeah, but why?
So that his daughter could do a duet with Kid Cudi.
Oh, right.
Like that's all it was. Yeah, and then I guess they decided to give him a walk by of Josh Hartnett.
That was in his terms.
Yeah, and that was Kid Cudi's choice, was to give him the fuck me eyes.
In front of his daughter.
Yeah. First half is bananas, but it's bananas in the most fun M. Night Shyamalan kind of way, right? And that's fine. That's what you go in kind of expecting. The second half where she's playing detective, for me, was egregious. Because I didn't expect them to ever get out of the arena.
No, I didn't either.
And I hoped that they wouldn't. I hoped that that was the film.
Yeah, because you lose that tension.
Exactly. And you move on to this weird sort of detective thing, which gets really all over the place really quickly, where she's locking herself in the bathroom and going on a live.
And at that point, he would just break the door down. I was like, why is he...
100%. He is such an enigma of a character in that he's never really reading as one of the two kinds of serial killer that you get in movies. He's always somewhere in between. So like one end of serial killers that you get in movies is basically fantastical, otherworldly almost.
Like the Zodiac.
Yeah, Zodiac type, but like Hannibal Lecter type, where it's so heightened and it's so in its own world that it's basically fantasy at that point when you're doing Hannibal Lecter.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, have you ever seen a film called Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer?
No, I haven't.
I think it's one of Michael Rooke's first roles.
Okay.
It's from the late 80s, early 90s. And he plays I think it's based on a real guy. A couple of real guys, these spree killers in, I want to say, Chicago. And it's this really dirty, nasty, real feeling serial killer. It's based on stuff that did happen, and it doesn't feel glamorized.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel otherworldly. He doesn't feel particularly clever.
Yeah,
he's not Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer. He's not,
it's just brutal.
Yeah, it's just brutal. It's just horrible. It's just nasty. And so that's the sort of like really real kind of killer. Josh Hartnett is some mess in between of tropes from different things that M. Night Shyamalan sort of like mashed together. He doesn't read as anything distinct, and that's not his fault.
The OCD is mentioned and then we see it, but there's nothing OCD before that.
No, he doesn't read as that at all. It's just like, that's a thing I've heard in a serial killer documentary, so I'll throw it in, right?
There could have been so much more of that. There could have been that when they first arrive. You know, they drive up and she's late. And she's like, come on, we need to go. And he's like, wait, the car's not straight. Drives in again. That's all you need. And then you know he's OCD.
Yeah, but you just made this film 10 times better. And you shouldn't be able to do that. There's so much money. How much did this cost?
Oh, like 50. Oh, wait, no, that was Nosferatu. I was looking up Nosferatu earlier.
So this cost... Okay, that's actually pretty meagre for this sort of film. It cost $30 million to make. That's a lot of fucking money for you to just correct it with one shot.
I'll only take 10%.
10%. Well, I mean, it outperformed the box office. It did okay. 82.7 million at box office. So it definitely made its money back. Mm. Which, again, I think is to do with a pretty good marketing campaign.
It was a good marketing campaign, yeah.
Good trailer, good marketing campaign. And I'm not going to say good, but serviceable first half for a Shyamalan film.
Mm.
I've seen worse from him. And then that second half where they're driving around. And also, you have Alison Pill there, and you choose to spend so much time on Shyamalan's daughter.
Yeah, I mean, Alison Pill is very good in it as the wife.
Yeah.
And kind of saved the ending for me. But again, it was very tropey. It was like, even that whole ending...
with the pie.
I was a bit like, oh, okay. now this is happening. And especially the bit that really got me for the end, when he bends down to pick up the bike.
Oh.
There is no fucking way on earth that these police officers, this SWAT team, this FBI agent is going to let him touch anything, let alone a bike.
Infuriating moment right at the end there.
Mm.
So he eats the fucking pie, right? Didn't see that one coming. So he's this mixture of inept and hyper competent at the same time when it services the film.
You have what is quite an impressive feat given the budget, the how many actors they had, the space they had. I totally agree with you. I thought it was all going to be in the stadium, and that was really interesting.
Yeah.
You burst that bubble, and then it's this cat and mouse thing and a power play. And there are moments where it comes through where it's really interesting, like where he just has his finger on her shoulder, and that's super powerful. But like,
you just said it perfectly. There are moments, right?
Yeah.
What he has done with this film, as he's done with that character specifically, is taken moments and ideas from better films and mashed them together. And so obviously you get moments that are great because they're just lifted from other stuff, right?
Yeah, and so many moments of closure in that there's an opportunity for it to go in a really new, intense direction, and then it just gets shut down. Like when he goes up onto the roof, the putting the, you know, he can't start the fire, that bit where he's about to, and we get this, I was like, okay, this is amazing. We're going to get this real cat and mouse of like, he's listening to the FBI agent.
Yeah.
She doesn't know she's talking to him.
Yeah.
We're going to get so much more of that, and we don't. And then she says,
oh, she's useless.
Completely useless. She's like, and that was such a waste as well, because to have a much older woman in this position of authority was super interesting. And then she just doesn't do anything.
Do you know what film she was in, that actress?
No, what film was she in?
The original Parent Trap.
Oh my God. Wait, no. As who? As the mum?
As the little girl, I think. When I say the original Parent Trap, I mean the Parent Trap from like, yeah, Hayley from Mills. The 60s, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a fun little tidbit. But you do that setup of her, the Hayley Mills character, for the whole first half of the film as being the major antagonist to Josh Hartnett's character. And then you make the whole second half of the film, Salika Shyamalan, as the antagonist to Josh Hartnett, where that's not been set up at all in the first half because she was performing on stage for the entirety of the first half, and you had the FBI profiler, and then you just drop her pretty much.
Yeah.
It's so naked in its desire to make Salika the star of the film, right?
Yeah, also when she does this, like, talking to him as if she's a mum because she's been taught by the FBI agent. Obviously, it doesn't work, but it almost works, and you're just like, really? Is that all it took, was a bit of a stern...
That's all it takes.
Like, dumb voice, and that's it?
That's what we want to teach people, is that all it takes to stop a serial killer is giving them a good hard spank on the bum.
To go back to this fire starting thing,
again,
it was like, oh, this is going in a cool direction, where he goes to the kitchen and puts the stuff in the oil so that it explodes.
Yeah.
But even the, you know, it's very undermining and dismissive of people who work in food preparation, because the manager comes over, stares at it for a good 20 seconds before it explodes in her face. You would run the fuck away.
I had already run away in my head
four times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of seeing that, I'm like, oh, that's going to explode.
Yeah, exactly. And then he grabs the apron, which is useful because it has his card in it. And then he goes up to the roof. And at this point, we've just heard from the FBI agent that we know that he's got the tattoo because he's put the cover over, he's snapped the wrist thing over it. So why is the first thing that they do not, can we see a wrist?
Well, that doesn't seem to be something that they're really focused on. This is what I was saying about the police not really being an obstacle to him leaving. I don't understand what the police would have been checking him for.
Yeah, and they're even getting briefed right there so he can move around them. I was like, was this not something you guys wanted to chat about a little bit before you got here?
It's such a classic thing in lazy writing or bad writing, right, where it's giving exposition of stuff that all these characters would 100% know already.
Yeah.
And again, if you make it the first half of the film is the whole film,
mm-hmm.
and you drip feed that information to him more, mm-hmm. and you don't have these big exposition scenes, we've got a whole film here of the cat and mouse in the arena.
True.
Right? Where it's more interesting, it's more tense, he's more in the dark, he just doesn't get all the information from everyone he speaks to immediately.
Yeah.
And eventually he figures out they know more and more and more about him.
His wife could have turned up.
Yeah, we could have brought her to the arena if we needed her to be in it. I mean, she could have been with them in the arena, like there's nothing stopping that.
Yeah, she could have been there, that would have been way more tense. And also the mum.
What, Alison Pill?
The ghost of the mother.
Ghost of the mother.
Of course you forgot, because it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and again, it's another element being thrown into this character, which diffuses any kind of core pathology, right? There's the OCD, there's the ghost of the mother that's haunting him and forcing him to kill. There's so much stuff going on and being thrown into this character. I mentioned earlier with Hannibal is a fantastical creation.
Mm-hmm.
Bits and pieces based on real people, but it's not a real person and it's not played like a real person.
No, because it's scarier that way.
Yeah, exactly. And so it is this heightened character, but it's a heightened character in a slightly heightened world where he has a really clear internal pathology, right? An internal consistency and a logic to the character.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to some of the other films and books and things outside of Silence of the Lambs, there's a backstory. So there is this real consistency and real clear character there. There's just none of that with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so muddy and so all over the place. Really, it's a shame for Josh Hartner because he could play any version of this that was a million times better.
Just keep remembering extra bits now where I'm like, the whole thing with the friends.
Oh, yeah.
And the friend's mum, that it's like, I was like, okay, well, she's obviously going to die because that's the setup, right?
Disregard setups, Hannah.
Yeah.
Disregard anything that gets set up.
I was wrong. I was totally wrong. And then she's like screaming at her own child that she's a bitch for what? Because Riley is on stage. Like, I really don't understand what that whole thing was about. Is it because it's Riley's arc because she makes new friends? Is it because we show that he's able to act like someone else is winning? I don't really understand what the point of that was.
You're asking the wrong person. There's a microcosm of the same thing in one of M. Night Shyamalan's few lines in the film, which I think was one of the more famous lines from this film. I'm her uncle, her mother's brother.
I was going to mention this.
Yeah, of course. How can you not? Again, it's the same problem, right? Where it's, why are we being told this?
Because also, as soon as we see him, it's like, oh, cool, a cameo.
Yeah, sure.
Leave him as like one of the security guards. Why would her uncle be in that role anyway?
Why?
Why does the woman backstage go, yeah, sure, you can just scoot out. Don't worry about it.
And again, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing that he sets up the whole, she's got, does he say she's got leukemia?
Yeah.
They set that up and then you expect that someone's going to mention, oh, how's the leukemia? Not, you know, like that, but... Someone's going to mention it and the daughter will be...
Wait, what?
Exactly. You expect that moment and that mm-hmm. will out him in some way that he's lying. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that they didn't do that. It could be a good thing in that it subverts our expectations of that setup. And it could just be, again, the same problem where you set something up and then you don't pay it off.
It's another loop, yeah.
Inclined to think it's the latter.
Yeah. And also, because her security team just let her go off in the limo with these two strangers without vetting them at all.
None of that would ever happen.
Whether she's said, these guys with me or not.
Yeah, whether she's said with fear in her eyes, let these people take me away on my own without any security or not, right?
Yeah. Yes. She wears heels for the whole thing.
Does she?
She comes back out of her dressing room wearing white stilettos. And I was like, girl would be in Uggs. Yeah. There's just no way. Yeah.
But again, she's the star of the film from this point onwards, right?
Yeah.
I'd be interested to understand how much of an influence she had on the film.
Interesting. I also wonder if the intention was for her to be the star, which it clearly is the intention.
Yeah.
Then make her the star. Make it that he's there to kill her, or he's there because, you know, maybe she's been posting about, oh, the butcher, like, he's so shit, or whatever it is that she wants to say, that he's like, I'm going to show her, and have it as an actual target. And then we bring in the FBI agent, and then we bring in her, and she actually has a reason to be there.
That's it, though. It's two separate films mashed together where nothing that is set up in the first film basically pays off. And everything that's set up in the second film is all over the place and I don't want to watch. And just to be clear as well, Salika is not the worst actress to ever live.
Oh, that's so generous.
But she's not good enough to hang a blockbuster on.
No, and like this piano in the house scene, it's like they didn't move the piano to get the shot, and so we get this super close up on her.
Yeah,
but that's it. Why are we not getting more of Josh Hartnett? Why are we not getting more of the space? It's the perfect moment of like a kind of tension build. And I guess this speaks to her not being an experienced actor, that she could be playing this song and trying to work out what the fuck she's going to do next. But instead, she just plays this song.
You hit the nail on the head with that, with that she's not an experienced actor. I watched Heretic the other day, and Hugh Grant is so good at those micro expressions that you put across on film that convey so much deeper thought.
Yeah.
Which is so difficult. And Josh Hartnett can do an element of that. I mean, he's not 100% doing that here, because it's not that kind of film as well with this. Like, he's not as good as Hugh Grant, but him and Alison Pill dwarf everyone else around them, which is a problem, right?
Yeah.
Even those scenes early on with him and the mum that you were mentioning, the mum of the friend of Riley.
Oh, yeah.
Him up against most other people in this film, especially him against Salika as well, it makes them look amateurish.
There's just no match.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. More of him and Kid Cudi, I say.
Okay, so we have it as Kid Cudi is actually another serial killer. And they've set a trap for each other. And the bait is Lady Raven.
100%. 100% better film. Any iteration of this where you stay in the arena and the trap is... Well, the trap is, like, closed in some sort of way, right?
Yeah, because... It's not a trap if he can get out.
Well, exactly, and he gets out. So he gets out of the trap. And then we're into this different film in the second half, which is completely away from the core premise of what we thought we were watching.
You know, you mentioned Hannibal Lecter, and if you look at Silence of the Lambs, you have this amazing interplay of power between him and Clarice, even in the cinematography of when one is higher than the other and who has the power, even within one conversation, it changes. You know, there's that iconic scene in the prison. With this, there's none of that, because it's like, oh, he's trapped, but he's going to get out. But he's got to be tall, so he's always shot from below, and he's in power, and then he's out, and then it's like a wearing different masks, basically, to escape, and always one step ahead in a weird way. And again, if you stay in the arena and he knows it's a trap, then why is he not playing more with the FBI agent? Like, she says at one point, he's not going to be surprised that we catch him. He'll know. He's not going to fight back, because she's profiled him so well, you know. So it's like, okay, if he really enjoys this to the level that we're supposed to believe.
Yeah, if he treats it as a game, yeah.
Yeah, then why is he not like, okay, bring it. Let's play the game. I'll trap you.
Yeah, trying to isolate the FBI profiler, for example. Yeah. That would have been an interesting strand.
And then again, you use Lady Raven as bait.
The closest that we come to robbing him of any kind of power in this film is that scene with the pie.
Which is so late. And it's the finale. It doesn't work.
I mean, it's the finale, so you kind of have to at that point. But even in the... So the scene you mentioned about Lady Raven becoming a dom, she's not a good enough actress to pull that off. Mm-hmm. And it's not a well enough put together scene to really make us believe that Josh Hartnett has lost any of his potency as this almost supernatural at times kind of serial killer.
Yeah.
He never really loses that until that moment with the pie at the end. And again, as you mentioned, it's right at the end and it's Alison Pill mm-hmm. selling that, mm-hmm. right? It's selling the fear and the shift in dynamic between them throughout the scene, which again, lifted straight from Better Stuff, mm-hmm. dosing someone like that who's a killer.
Mm.
There is good stuff in here. It's the good stuff in here that frustrates me. I don't get frustrated by a really bad film particularly. I get frustrated by stuff where there's a good film in there.
Yeah.
And
it missed.
Wasted opportunity.
Mm.
Shyamalan used to, in his early career, ask really interesting questions about life and death and religion and belief. And his first film was about going back to India and exploring heritage and belief and his relation to his roots, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a guy who used to have really interesting stuff to say.
Well, he did Sixth Sense, right?
Yeah, he did Sixth Sense.
One of the most iconic films ever.
Yeah, he had a run of, I think it was three films, which was Sixth Sense.
Signs.
Unbreakable.
Oh, yeah, he did Unbreakable.
Which was great. Sixth Sense.
Oh, and The Village.
Unbreakable. And The Village was once he'd started to go off the boil a bit, wasn't it?
Mm.
But he's done, this is it. He's done interesting stuff, even in his worst work. Although I haven't seen Last Airbender. I've heard nothing but trash about that.
Mm.
He is capable of doing interesting stuff. Split.
Yeah.
Split was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Split and Glass. The two of them together. I didn't see Old yet. I think I know the plot of that, and it sounds like nonsense. But that's it. He veers between, like, really... Who wrote Split? Did he write? Yeah, he wrote it. So he's capable. He's capable of good things.
For me, the most interesting reading of this film is mirroring his relationship to his daughter and why he's doing this film with the Cooper character and how he is failing because his daughter is there. So the reason that he doesn't escape is because his daughter is there. The reason he's there, the reason he's in the trap is because of his daughter. The reason he has made this film in this way.
The reason he can't make a good film is because of his fucking daughter.
It's not because of his daughter, it's because of his blindness to his daughter.
Yeah. There's interesting questions that we could have asked. I mean, Riley, we drop for the second half of the film, right?
The dialogue around her being like, what is wrong with you? Dad's being weird.
Yeah.
Is super interesting. There's this moment where she's dancing on stage and the woman backstage is like, oh, she's going to remember this as the best day of her life.
Mm.
This is a moment where we do see Josh Hartnett really come into his own because you see his thought, but she's going to know that her dad's a serial killer today. And so it's going to be the worst day of her life. But then that's it. And we don't get any more of that. And then also they bring the kids back before he's been arrested and then let them run over to him. They're like, oh, your kids are coming back from your sisters or your aunts or whatever.
They're safe.
But they'll be back. And then they come before... Just like, come on, guys, let's get him out the way and then you can come back.
The cops make indecipherable decisions at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, consistently.
They don't clear the area when they're shooting the limo.
Oh, yeah, with the crowd
people around. Everywhere.
Yeah, the cops are inept throughout. That's pretty clear.
I think I was disappointed because of my misunderstanding of the trailer. And I thought that he'd set a trap for the police. And then I thought it was going to be asking a really interesting question. I thought it was kind of, you know, all cops are bastards, that kind of thing. And especially because at the beginning, when he's noticing people getting taken at the beginning, they're people of color, and he looks really angry about it. And I was like, this is going to be super interesting. And it's not that at all.
No. Again, all set up, no payoff. I can't remember what film we were talking about endings being so important.
I think we just generally
I mean, it comes up again and again and again and again. But it's so easy to do setup, right? I mean, Lost is the prime offender of that, right?
It was all a dream.
Well, yeah, there's no payoff. And there's no... So, do you know Babylon 5?
I mean, I haven't watched it, but I know of it.
Okay, so Babylon 5, I think the guy's name is J. Michael Straczynski, and he wrote a Bible for a 5-season TV show with all of these different arcs and all of these different characters plotted out from start to finish. So it is this complete story, meticulously plotted out as to where he was going. It fell apart a little bit towards the end because he thought that they were going to have to wrap it up with season 4. Mm-hmm. So they rushed a few things, and then season 5 had to spin a few wheels a little bit. But it was really thought out. That's so difficult to do.
Yeah.
No one does that.
And Lost was the total opposite.
Exactly.
There was a Bible for Lost as well.
I'm sure there was. There would have been something there.
I think it was one of the first to do a hyper-stylized Bible that wasn't just the text. They designed it to look like it's been found from an island, like it's really battered.
Right.
And you get the sense and the tone and the style really visually in the Bible. And then the text of it is basically like, ooh.
It just says vibes.
It is basically, it's a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
And it's some characters and they're like, could be this. Guess you'll have to find
right.
out. And the fact that they managed to sell that is incredible.
Yeah. I've not seen all of Lost, but...
No, who has time for that?
There is good stuff in there. I've seen bits and pieces of it, and there's good stuff in there. There's good actors in there. There's good bits and pieces of it. It's just lacking a sort of cohesive whole, right?
And
I'm sure there'll be people that will... Yeah, I'm sure there'll be people that will argue to the death that it's actually brilliant and I'm a cretin.
Yeah, I haven't met any of those people, though.
They exist online.
And obviously the question is, how many degrees of Nick Holt?
This was a pretty quick one for me.
Oh, I haven't looked.
You haven't looked?
Let's see.
I say it's a quick one because there's not many people that I felt like you could easily go through other than...
Josh Hartnett and Hayley Mills.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe you could go through Alison Pill. She's done lots of bits and pieces.
So you got it in how many?
What's this, like 2 steps?
2. Ooh, okay. Well, yeah. Josh Hartnett then. Black Mirror.
Oh, for fuck's Daniel Kaluuya. Yeah, Nicole,
but right? I'll go a different way. I can go a different way. I think I've used that one a few too many times. So
yeah, Daniel Kaluuya is just such a great route.
Lucky number 11 because it's one of my favourite films ever.
Oh, interesting.
But then we're going to be far away from Nicole. Yeah, that's not going to help. He's not been in as many films as I...
Josh Hartnett?
Yeah. I mean, he's been in a lot of films, but there's fewer than I recognise.
I will say the film that I connected it through...
is random as fuck.
Well, it's a bit random. I have actually seen it, and it's relatively recent.
Okay.
And he's not the lead in it at all.
Huh. Okay. Because I was going Sin City, and that's not going to... fit with any of the things that you just said.
No.
Well, probably Oppenheimer then.
It's not the one I was thinking of, but there's got to be something there for sure.
Oh, it's just this only 2 steps that's really throwing
me. Get in as many steps as you want. I found a good one here. Yeah.
Maybe I need to go the other way. Start with Nick Holt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could work.
So funny that on IMDb, the things that come up, the first thing that comes up, like under his name, where it just says, which Nick Holt? Is actor Garfield the musical.
That's so funny when someone's got such like a varied, interesting career and they become known for something so ill-fitting with it.
It's because he's credited as Nick Holt in Garfield, but he's actually Nicholas Holt in everything else. Do you reckon he's done that on purpose so that Garfield doesn't come up
maybe.
With
it? Oh, well, I was just thinking, I don't know if you've ever heard David Cross talk about the fact that, I think he was in the Alvin and the Chipmunks film. Or films, plural, maybe.
Mm.
And he made more money off of the first one of those than he had from everything else in his career to that point.
Wow. This is hard. There's a weird crossover in that Nicholas Hoult is in X-Men with Kevin Bacon. Oh, I mean, this is kind of cheating.
Go for it.
Wasn't James McAvoy in Split? And that's M. Night Shyamalan.
I'll take that.
Thanks, because I was really flailing.
There's not a lot of stars in this. I'll take that. The route I had was that Josh Hartnett is in a little film called Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, with Hugh Grant, about a boy.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I was thinking we were talking about Nick Hoult, and so I was like, obviously he's in a film with Hugh Grant. Okay. Yeah, that's good. So final
thoughts. Final thoughts. Yeah, I again, disappointing. The real trap was having to watch this film, right?
I had the opposite because I don't love horror. I was expecting it to be scarier than it was. Well, I was expecting it to be scary at all.
Right.
And it wasn't, and so I had a little smug, like, oh, I'm fine with this.
Right.
So that was nice.
It's like eating spicy food where it's not as spicy as you thought it was going to be, and you're like, ah, I'm a fucking pro.
It was a mild trap.
This was the korma of, yeah. I was expecting Shyamalan back to form because he's, you know, he's proven in the past that he can do good stuff, good trailer. Mm-hmm. So my expectations were probably too high for this. And I probably set your expectations lower. And the and genre helped. Element probably set your expectations lower. So, yeah.
So I had a great time.
There you go. Yeah. Go
out and, highly recommend.
And, rent or buy Trap now, wherever you can find Trap.